eight presentations that are scheduled, and in between there will be discussions. So it is going to be a long day for the party. We were delaying a bit to see if we can get copies of a presentation by Greenpeace. Unfortunately, there is a problem. The machines are broken. We are not able, the staff members are not able to make copies, so they are trying somewhere. I'm told that the presentation by Greenpeace only came last night around 6. So it was only, they were not able to make copies. I don't know why, because we had agreed long time that we're going to have today's meeting, and Greenpeace was going to be the first to present their report. We normally get presentation well in advance. I don't know why it came very late. So it's disrupting our studying session. And everything else is based on, because we want to hear what Greenpeace has to say about the state of air pollution in Mpumalanga. That's one of the priority areas. So I guess we'll get an explanation from Greenpeace why we didn't get the presentation well in advance. We don't want to allow that we go through the presentations and members don't have copies. If this was not going to be the main or the base presentation, we're going to move to the next one, but we can't move to the next one without getting this one first. So let's say, I hope the reps from Greenpeace are in the house. Are you there? Can't you come to the side to present? So I hope the rest of the other organizations or institutions that are going to present are ready, and they've sent their presentations well in advance, and the copies have been made. Otherwise, we'll have to skip those. If we don't have copies. Okay, over to you.
Thank you very much, Portfolio Chair. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, members of Parliament and civil society members, government officials, SASOL and ESCOM, including members of the media. My name is Happy Kambule, and I'm from Greenpeace Africa. And on my right is Melita Steele, and she's also from Greenpeace Africa. The manner in which we're going to give the presentation is twofold. I'll do opening remarks. Melita will take us through the methodology as well as the findings of the report. And I will also do closing remarks on the report.
Are you going to explain first why we didn't get the presentation in advance?
Yeah, well, I was about to go there.
Yeah, maybe we must start there.
Sorry. The reason why we took so long with the presentation, and we really do apologize for it, and we believe that it will not happen again, and we are sincerely sorry. The reason for that was we were trying our best to make sure that the presentation is as clear as possible and that we don't have anything that would be ambiguous and vague. So we had to take it through another process of vetting as well in order to make sure that it reflects what is in the report, at least that we do not lose the main key points of the report. It tends to happen when you make a presentation out of a report that you lose the key things because you want it to flow very well and not to be confusing or vague. So we hope that you take our apology and it will not happen again. Can I proceed, sir?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Just to share what Greenpeace Africa is and who we are, we are an independent environmental organization. We campaign on a number of issues around Africa. Within the African continent, we have 5 offices. We are based in South Africa, the DRC, Senegal, Cameroon, and Kenya. In each of these offices, we've got key flagship programs that we are doing. And in South Africa, we focus mainly on energy issues as well as climate change. Particularly, we've been campaigning on a just transition away from coal and nuclear and towards renewable energy and energy efficiency. The thing that is very peculiar about Greenpeace, or makes us really different from many other organizations, and that we believe is a key sense of our identity, is that we are financially independent. So we do not take money from corporates, nor do we take money from governments. It's all individual, the public contributions. We work in the public interest, so not for self-interest or for any other agendas. We believe in social and environmental justice as being the core of our work. And what we do is we strive to realize the constitutional rights of Section 24, particularly to a healthy environment. In order for us to also understand the context in which we have developed this this report, or rather this study, we need to also consider that we are in a situation where we are currently doing an electricity plan. The basis of this report is that through the manner in which we've been producing a certain type of electricity, or the type of electricity that we've been producing, we've been using a particular resource. This resource has externalities. This resource has issues associated with its use. And what we've been able to do is to show some of these externalities. What we would like to show is that in order for Parliament to continue doing its oversight work and to effectively apply its mind to the many complexities that the parliamentarians get to hear, get to grapple their minds with, we just want to give the facts. And the facts are about air pollution and the extent to which it is in South Africa and around the world. So the report that we have right now is a report which is a global report, and then it also focuses on South Africa and many other countries such as China as well as Japan, if I'm corrected. Just to close off on the opening remarks is that this is just one of the things that we need to deal with as an environmental issues. Alongside climate change, these emissions are coming also with the increase or with the emissions that are associated with greenhouse gas emissions, such as maybe your carbon dioxide and your carbon equivalents. We just focused on one. We did not focus on the other emissions. So there will be other times when we will talk about the other emissions. This is particularly only on the NOx. So I'll hand over to Medlita to take us through the methodology as well as the findings of the report. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, and our apologies once again, and thank you to Leka for making sure that the presentation was circulated. In terms of our analysis, basically what has happened is that at the end of October this year, Greenpeace released an analysis of satellite data, which we mapped globally across 6 continents. We used the data that came from the European Space Agency satellite, which has been providing detailed data in unprecedented detail on NO2 levels in the atmosphere since the 1st of June. So to be clear, the analysis is over a 3-month period from June, July, and August this year. That is over winter in South Africa, So where the wind conditions are particularly stable in Mpumalanga. So there may be variations in terms of seasonal patterns. However, we are very certain that what the satellite data has done is provide a level of clarity and detail that we didn't have before. It's very clear from the data and research around NO2 and NOx as well that these are dangerous pollutants. They cause respiratory symptoms and lung damage, and on acute exposure can cause heart disease and even lung cancer. What we did is we analyzed the data from the satellites and ranked them into the top 50 hotspots of nitrogen dioxide around the world. Annual or longer term trends may show slightly different results from the 3-month snapshot that we have here. And it's important to note that the data from the satellite measures the amount of nitrogen dioxide across the full height of the troposphere, which is about 10 kilometers up from the ground. So the satellite, we're not saying that the satellite data is directly comparable to ground level measurements. We defined a hotspot as being within a 25 kilometer radius. The nitrogen dioxide levels are highest around the major sources, and we averaged the nitrogen dioxide levels over a period of time, which enabled us to reveal the biggest sources of nitrogen dioxide emissions around the world. Nitrogen dioxide is formed whenever fuel is burned at a high temperature or if the fuel itself contains nitrogen. Coal, oil, gas, and biomass burning all contribute to nitrogen dioxide emissions. Next slide. In terms of our findings, what you will see in this map is the world's biggest nitrogen dioxide pollution hotspots in the world. I would draw your attention to the colors in the maps. It's a little bit difficult to see, but what you're looking for is the deepest red spots. So as you can see, there's quite a conglomeration in China, but most of those spots are a deep orange, and there is a very deep red spot in Mpumalanga. And essentially what we have found there is that Mpumalanga is the worst nitrogen dioxide pollution hotspot in the world. The province has a cluster of 12 coal-fired power stations, which are all owned and operated by Eskom, with a capacity of 34 gigawatts. And South Africa, therefore, has the most polluting cluster of coal-fired power stations in the world. The analysis points to coal and transport as being the two main sources of emissions. And although Mpumalanga is the worst hotspot in the world, the list of largest nitrogen dioxide hotspots in the world includes coal-fired power stations in Germany and India, a total of 9 coal-fired power stations and industrial clusters in China, cities such as Santiago de Chile, London, Paris, Dubai, and Tehran also feature high on the ranking. The next layer of the analysis, looking at satellite data once again, is that Johannesburg and Pretoria are also affected by this pollution. So while we all know that Mpumalanga is one of the country's massive coal belts, what the satellite data reveals is that there are winds that blow across from Mpumalanga into both Johannesburg and Pretoria. According to our analysis, looking at 30 years worth of data on Meteor Blue, for about 28% of the year, winds blow over Johannesburg from an easterly direction, which means that they're coming from Mpumalanga. So what you can see on the map over there is that on the right-hand side you have Mpumalanga. Where the red plumes are, you can see Johannesburg is right in the middle, and Pretoria is just a little bit to the north. This means that the worst air quality impacts and highest personal health risks are borne by the population of Mpumalanga, but the power plants also heavily impact the air quality in major cities like Johannesburg and Pretoria, as it is clear from the satellite data. Because of the large exposed population, most of the public health impacts and external costs imposed on the economy from the plants happens in the major population centers. These long-range health impacts are a blind spot in the debate around air pollution from coal power plants in South Africa, and we believe that Eskom's assessments completely ignore the impact of their coal-fired power stations on densely populated areas. When we released this report and this analysis and this mapping, the question that I was asked a lot is, why isn't Mpumalanga so bad? So you have countries like China, India, the USA, Europe. Why would South Africa have the worst pollution hotspot? So Mpumalanga is the second largest province in South Africa, second smallest province in South Africa, with a population of about 4.5 million people. But it has the highest levels of nitrogen dioxide globally. This is because the province has the world's biggest and most concentrated coal cluster. Mpumalanga accounts, just this tiny province, accounts for 83% of South Africa's coal production. It has 12 old, highly polluting coal-fired power stations within a 25-kilometer radius. Overall, the nitrogen dioxide emissions in China are higher, but in terms of individual clusters, none of the Chinese emission hotspots are as large as Mpumalanga. This is largely because Chinese power plants and factories have installed emission control devices, while Eskom continues to seek postponements from complying with weak minimum emission standards. So moving on to the weak minimum emission standards, what you will see in front of you is a graph. And although it's a little bit difficult to read, what it essentially shows is that in South Africa, our minimum emission standards are weaker than the majority of other countries around the world. That our current minimum emission standards allow coal-fired power stations to emit up to 10 times more nitrogen oxides than allowed in China or Japan. And even despite how weak our minimum emission standards are, the majority of Eskom's very old and highly polluting coal-fired power stations do not comply with these minimum emission standards. In 2015, Eskom was granted a 5-year postponement from complying with the minimum emission standards. This decision was taken although postponements can only be made if ambient air quality standards in the area are in compliance and will remain in compliance even if the postponement is granted. But in the Highveld region, which covers Mpumalanga, that area has been declared a high priority area by the Department of Environmental Affairs because it is not in compliance with the national ambient air quality standards. In 2018, Eskom is again applying for postponements from complying with the minimum emission standards. Greenpeace is strongly opposed to this application and believes that this satellite data provides even more evidence that air pollution is a crisis in South Africa, and Eskom's coal-fired power stations must either comply with air quality legislation or be decommissioned faster than anticipated. This map provides further evidence that the air pollution levels in Mpumalanga and the Highveld coal cluster are the highest in the world and require urgent attention, not further postponements from complying with relatively weak air quality legislation. The one thing to note about the satellite data is that this provides data that means that there is no longer anywhere for polluters to hide. So often when civil society organizations are trying to access information about levels of pollution, we're told that that is not information that can be put in the public domain. However, when we can access satellite data like this, that provides an eye in the sky, which means that there is nowhere for polluters to hide. So in our analysis, we looked at nitrogen dioxide, but what about SO2? So besides nitrogen dioxide, the SO2 emissions from Eskom's coal power stations are also one of the largest man-made sources of the pollutant globally, dwarfing anything found in China or India, based on the NASA data for the most recent 24 months. So what you can see on the map on the screen are the global SO2 hotspots, and again, you see Mpumalanga coming up as a massive red spot in South Africa. The reason that South Africa, once again, is a problem when it comes to SO2 is that countries like China have initiated much stronger emissions control measures. Even if South Africa's minimum emission standards, as they were initially contemplated, were implemented, that would allow for 5 to 15 times as much pollution as is allowed in China. Greenpeace has questions about the Department of Environmental Affairs approach to SO2. We believe that the Department of Environmental Affairs has decided to unlawfully weaken the SO2 emission standards for coal-fired power stations. In October 2018, the department's updated framework for air quality management significantly weakened the minimum emission standards. The minimum emission standards for new installations was originally set at 500 milligrams per meter cubed, but these MES were revised by the department upwards to 1,000 milligrams, which is 30 times more than coal-fired power stations are allowed to emit in China. This revision was not part of the original public participation proposal and appeared in the final framework, and we believe it is therefore undemocratic and unlawful. Greenpeace is calling on the Department of Environmental Affairs to withdraw this weakening of the MES with immediate effect. China has achieved very dramatic reductions in SO2 emissions thanks to strong emission standards and substantial investments in clean energy, which has put the limits and brakes on expansion of power generation from coal. These emission reductions have been a key driver of air quality improvements in China over the past years, avoiding an estimated 100,000 premature deaths per year.
Just to close off, we believe as Greenpeace that no postponements from complying with air quality, with minimum emission standards for Eskom's power fleet in South Africa should be granted. We believe that if we get an analogy such as a car or analogy of anything that we've built or have in the world, especially in relationships that we have with whatever we own, if something is broken, if something is not working, you try to fix it as best as you can. But if it can't be fixed, you need to let it go. You need to let it go and use something else. And this is where we're at right now, because if these power stations do not comply, they need to be decommissioned ASAP. And in the initial IRP 2010, we had a decommissioning timeline, and some of these power stations are fitting within that decommissioning timeline. But it now shows that we might need to do this. In fact, we need to do this earlier. An air pollution action plan for Mpumalanga, Johannesburg, and Pretoria needs to be done, because these fall in within the high priority areas. This follows the guidelines and air pollution levels of the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the International Emission Standards for Power Stations. We would like to say that we need to set up concrete measures and steps to improve the air quality levels in those regions and make sure that they comply with air quality standards within 5 years. We would like to also introduce the idea of an independent, regular and reliable air pollution monitoring system, which is available to the public and informs decision making at all levels, including making sure that data is open source in order to make sure that it is transparent. To this effect, no new coal power stations in the electricity plan should be recommended nor built. The cancellation of Unit 5 and 6 of Kusile power stations within Mpumalanga should be done, and the decommissioning of 50% of the current coal fleet by 2013, in line with the latest IPCC report on climate change, the special report on 1.5, should be considered, meaning that the IRP 2010 should not look at new coal, meaning the 1,000 megawatts cannot be in. The Unit 5 and 6 of Kusile should not be carried through, meaning that it should be curtailed, and 50% of our built program that is already installed, which is not complying, should be decommissioned in line with the IPCC report, special report on 1.5. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. Now, earlier on, I didn't deal with the apologies because I was a bit frustrated about non-availability of the presentation. So we skipped an item on apologies. So I only have one from the minister who's attending a cabinet meeting that started at 8:30. Okay, Honorable Yenge. Oh, Honorable Nyambi is serving in another committee, DMR, Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, and then Kekana in Water and Sanitation. Yeah, those are the apologies. We don't have all the DG apologized. She's still in Egypt. Yeah, those are the only apologies that we have. okay, so how we are going to proceed? We will get a couple of other presentations from CSIR and then from the department. And then we would allow questions, comments, and some more inputs from the members, and we can also take from the rest of the other invited guests. So we'll thank you very much for the presentation. We will now invite CSIR. CSIR. Okay. Okay, do we have copies of this one? who's doing the
good morning, Honorable Chair. One of our assistants is printing them, so she's going to bring them in about 5 minutes.
Who are you?
My name is Elia Matigani from the CSIR Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Okay. You guys know that what we are doing is highly unprofessional. We agreed long time ago. In fact, that was a request from the department to have CSIR to present. Now, for you to run around this morning making copies is just out of order. Now we have to wait for the presentations when you have been aware that you have to come and talk to us. In fact, you asked that you must come and talk to us. Now, it's not on. We are wasting time now. We have got a sitting taking place at 3 and we have got lots of presentations this morning. Yeah, this is just unacceptable. Who's ready? Department, are you ready? Okay, let's get the department, and as soon as let's get the department, and then as soon as the presentation from CSIR is ready, we will then come back to CSIR. Who in the department is going to take us through?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Chair and members. We have Dr. Thuli Khumalo is not in the country. She's attending a chemicals COP in Geneva. So we have from her team Ms. Elizabeth Masekwameng, who is the Director of Atmospheric Policy, Regulations and Planning, who will then take us through the departmental response. Thank you, Chair.
Where is the DDG?
The DDG is in India at a basic ministerial meeting.
Yeah, well, unfortunately they do travel. There is all COPs. There is Minamata. Is it Minamata? Is the one that she's attending. There is the Minamata COP that is taking place. There is a Convention on Biodiversity COP 14 in Egypt. So they do travel a lot. It's part of international work that the department does. But I think one of them should have prioritized this committee to come, you know. But let's hear. You'll introduce yourself again.
Okay. My name is, thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Elizabeth Masekwameng. I am the Director responsible for Atmospheric Policy, Regulations and Planning in the department.
Speak to the mic, just pull it closer to you. Yeah.
Okay, is it better now? Okay. The department does welcome the Greenpeace report.
Yeah, start again, yeah.
Oh, okay. My name is Elizabeth Masekwameng. I'm the director responsible for atmospheric policy, regulations and planning at the Department of Environmental Affairs. So as the department, we do welcome the Greenpeace report. We do acknowledge that satellite imageries are showing elevated levels of NOx above Mpumalanga. However, we do object and challenge the fact that that makes Mpumalanga the worst in the world. And in this presentation, we would like to give context to what is presented by Greenpeace. First of all, the groundbreakingness of the report, we are fully aware of satellite imageries and the observations and all the studies. This was not the first one, and as the department, we don't find the information to be new. And indeed, all the satellite imageries are showing that South Africa, Mpumalanga, but not only Mpumalanga, the India, USA, and China are the hotspots when it comes to NOx. However, as the previous speaker indicated, they took their measurements over 3 months. And those are the winter months where we have invasion layer in the country, we have got poor dispersion, and therefore you expect to see those high levels at that time. When it's winter in Europe, you start seeing that shift as well. And in the next slide, I'm showing what you would see if you then take longer-term measurements that are beyond the 3 months. This is a satellite imagery that was taken over the years. It does show that there's a dot in Mpumalanga, a red dot, which shows that there are high levels. But if you look at China and compare with that, you cannot therefore come to a conclusion that we are the worst in the world. The other thing to note is that the previous speaker spoke about the sources in Mpumalanga that are contributing to high levels of NOx. Yes, they do contribute, but they are not the only contributors. We have satellite imagery showing that you have transportation of pollutants from areas as far as Johannesburg and the Vaal Triangle that can be reported as Mpumalanga, at Mpumalanga at those levels. The other thing that the report probably forgot to mention is that there has been reduction over the years in terms of NOx. Again, we are showing satellite imageries from different sources showing that we have a 24% reduction in NOx over Johannesburg and Pretoria and 10 to 30% decrease over Mpumalanga between 2005 and 2014. So those are just a little bit of details that we will give around satellite imagery. But as the, again, Greenpeace has indicated, the satellite takes a picture from high above the ground up in the atmosphere, and they give you an indication of the NOx level across the column of air. However, as the country, we are more interested in the lower level NOx, meaning that below the clouds, what is called, that is actually what people breathe, and that is actually what you can therefore link to health impacts. And for us to do that, we have deployed various expensive instruments that monitors the air that the people breathe. And Honorable Chair, we have monitoring stations in MLO, in Hendrina, in Middleburg, in Secunda, and in Witbank that are telling us what the levels of NOx are at the level when people breathe. We have established the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for NOx, and at the moment, our data that was collected between May and September, which is within the range that the Greenpeace report is talking about, because their data was between June and August. At ground level, we are showing that levels that are below the standard. So this is what the people are breathing at the moment. In terms of emissions, the previous speaker did indicate that we are not the worst in terms of emissions. And we have at our National Atmospheric Emission Inventory System, where we, which is our repository for emissions data. With the limitations of the system, obviously we are not having all the sources in at the moment. We have calculated 1,275 kilotons of NOx that is released. That is for the year 2017. Other countries in the EU are reporting 4,000. China is reporting in the region of 16,000. The US, 4,000. And these figures, again, indicate that we cannot be the worst in the world. We are not saying we are the best or we are better, but we are not the worst. So overall, our sense is that the Greenpeace observations do not represent ground level concentrations, and therefore it can be misleading to link that directly to the health impacts. And as the previous speaker indicated, satellite imageries are not only giving us NOx data, there is information around PM and SOx, and data that we have in the priority area for all these pollutants indicates that if we are to be concerned about human health in Mpumalanga, we should be focusing on particulate matter. And we are not in any way underestimating the role that NOx play in PM formation. Lastly, Honorable Chair, Greenpeace did make specific demands. One of them is that there be no further postponement that is issued, particularly for EFCOM. And we want to the members to know that postponements are a legal provision. They are in the law, and we cannot, the department cannot preempt the decision that they will make. Each application will be reviewed and will be dealt with on case by case based on its merits. They recommended that an action plan be developed. We do have an air quality management plan for the high soil priority area, and we acknowledge in our review that there are some areas that can be improved in the plan, and as such we have initiated the process of reviewing the plan, and we will be engaging with our stakeholders soon. The report indicated that there seems to be lack of transparency in terms of accessing monitoring data. As a department, we have recently upgraded the SAQIS, which is the South African Air Quality Information System. We have data that is available. I just, before I start here, opened the app, which is the application that we have on the cell phone that anyone can download from any smartphone that will show you what the levels of air pollution are as we speak for each of the pollutants, even for NOx. They recommended that there be no additional power station and that some of the plants must be commissioned. As a department, we believe that the Department of Energy should take a lead on that, and therefore we cannot engage further on the issue of decommissioning of power plants. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. There was a claim made about the revision of the standards, minimum emission standards. And I didn't hear you talking to that. It's not on the slides. It's something that you don't want to comment on.
Chair, that was not part of the report, but my colleague will be talking to that. The report focused on NOx, but my colleague will talk to the SO2 issue.
Okay. Or is it going to come on the MES later on?
It is on that report, Chair.
Okay. All right. Can we get back to CSIR?
Honourable Chair, good morning Honourable Members, and good morning to everyone. Quite excited for this discussion, and I do have to apologize for the lateness of these slides. That is on me. I was trying to make the presentation as clear as possible. So I apologize for that. In the future, I will be sure to send it sooner. So I was invited today to respond to some of the Greenpeace report, but also I thought having a discussion about the NO2 hotspot and the pollution in Mpumalanga. Just a few slides about where I'm coming from. I am in the CSIR. Part of our mandate is through multidisciplinary research to improve the quality of life for the people of the Republic. And we take this mandate very seriously, and that's one of the reasons we do quite a bit of work in air quality. The research impact areas in the CSIR are listed here, and I sit within the natural resources and the environment. And our group is about 20 researchers. We go from climate modeling, so a lot of the local climate modeling outputs you see come from our group. We also do air quality modeling, which is what I am the lead of, as well as impacts, but other climate change aspects. You can see the picture there is us trying to look tough, I guess. These are the Pretoria group-based members of our group. We also have members in Stellenbosch and in Durban. So the goal of our group, as I like to see it, is to provide the scientific base. So we talk about what can the evidence show us and what can the evidence not yet show us. And we we see ourselves as an independent research council. We are a parastatal, but we work for multiple stakeholders. And we provide the information as it is. We provide the information.
Given the short time, I did start with my main message.
Then I'll provide some details. And I think when I was going through my main message trying to craft this, is that, you know, improving air quality is not easy. It takes time. All of the countries who have gone through this, it takes a long time and a lot of effort. But we have limited time, we have limited money, so we have to do it right. And so while I'm talking about some of the responses to what's been brought up, it might seem pedantic, it might seem academic, however, we have to get it right because we have to improve air quality. Being out of compliance, I think everyone in this room wants to improve air quality. Being out of compliance means that people's health is at risk, and that is not an acceptable solution, not an acceptable state. So I will go through a lot of, many of the things that I have in my slides might be repetitive. I had not seen other people's slides before, nor had they seen these. So I will go quickly when I have anything repetitive. But I did want to start with this picture. It's a quite simplistic picture, but it shows, I drew a little guy at the bottom, a little man. I'll make him turn so everybody can see him. We're down there, and there are many sources of pollution, and some can be emitted at low level, for example, cars. Those are the ones that the emissions in the ambient, the air that we breathe, are really closely related because they're right in our face. We have all been next to, you know, the exhaust of a car. However, there are things like airplanes and industry that emit aloft. It's only when they come down to the ground that they affect us. And so we must always separate emissions and what we breathe. It's not the same thing. We do not inhale directly what an airplane emits. And if we think about the sources of NOx, I've highlighted some of them in the picture. You can see I also added lightning in there and domestic burning. There's lots of different sources of NOx. However, one thing that a lot of them have in common is that it is from the combustion of fossil fuel. There's also industry, and there are other, even soils release NOx, but the combustion of fossil fuel does impact a lot. As has been stated by everyone, and was stated in the Greenpeace report as well, that these measurements are column. And I thought this was a nice picture from NASA, just giving the idea of a satellite looks through the whole atmosphere. So while our little man is at the bottom, or the little person, sorry, is at the bottom, the satellite sees everything. And this was stated in the report. However, when some of the conclusions were drawn and when, unfortunately, the press wrote about it, they forgot about this caveat. So you can use this information to get what we breathe, but it's not very simple. You have to use a model like what we run. So I'm showing very similar things, it looks like, to what Elizabeth showed. That's one of the claims, is that this is the world's largest NO2 hotspot. And is there a hotspot? Yes. I think everybody here will completely agree. The one on the left shows an average from 2002 to 2012, and then 2014 averages there from even different instruments, Skiamaki and OMI. Those are different satellite instruments. However, we cannot make comparisons and declare this the world's largest. There's many different reasons for that. One is the seasonality, which has been brought up, and I will show in the next slide an example. Another one I actually just learned. I reached out to the Trope OMI team in preparation to come here, and one of the things they mentioned is altitude matters. And we are in the Highveld at a higher altitude, and you must correct for that. So when we are at a higher altitude and our emissions go up and are higher up, they're almost seen more strongly. And so they said this is something they know and you need to correct for. So this is just something to improve the methodology that local scientists that we do as we go forward. I thought that was kind of interesting that all the things that can affect this. So I did want to show here with the seasonality. I thought this picture was quite telling. This is Africa, NO2, December and February in our summer, and then June and August in our winter. And also a paper that I found showed the timing of max NO2 in different places. And ours is July and August, what they showed. East China, Eastern U.S., that's in January. So we were comparing our peak almost to one of their lower periods. So it's not quite fair. We would need more long-term measurements to say that. And then one of the quotes that I have here and that was stated today is that this hotspot goes over the city of Johannesburg. And first off, the evidence does not support that that then has health impacts. This does get transported throughout the high belt, throughout South Africa, throughout the area. But again, we're at the ground, and the transport happens at the top. And this was, there was stated in the Greenpeace report that this was column. However, when this statement was made, it's treating the information as if it was ground level, and it is not necessarily ground level. Also, the transport of pollution, you know, we're just looking at a picture. It's hard to tell the transport in a picture. The satellite goes over one time a day. You need to do further analysis to understand the zone of influence. And I'm sure that that is coming as well. I'll keep that. And as Elizabeth said, again, I didn't know we would say so many similar things, but we don't have many places out of compliance with NO2 itself. Many of the areas that are out of compliance in the greater high belt are traffic sites a lot of times. Also, what we see, and I put this here, these are NO2 per day of week for the high belt and the Vol study sites. We see them decrease in the weekend. Now, coal-fired power plants don't take the weekend off, right? So this is something with a behavior change. If this hotspot all came to the ground crashing down on our head, we would see much higher NO2. We would also not probably see such a strong weekend effect. But, and I'm an academic, I always have to say, but, NO2 reacts in the atmosphere. This has been highlighted. Just because the NO2 itself, we are not in compliance, the things that it forms are, for example, ozone. And I have to, being a modeler, show at least one modeling output. I hope this is, you'll bear with me. This is from the CSIR model. I hope everyone can see it. It's one day, and I picked this day because it makes my point. It shows what's happening. We have an NO2 plume. I hope everyone can see that. And then this is organic compounds. And so you need the NO2 plus the organics to make ozone. That's how ozone is made. And so you can see as the sunlight comes out, this is isoprene. It comes from plants, and they only emit during daylight. So this is one day going over and over. So you can see when the isoprene comes up, that's sunlight, that's night. And then on the right-hand side is ozone. And we have to be quick, but you can see when the isoprene, they're the red. When you have the NOx and the VOC together, you get the red within the ozone. This is a simulation. Like I said, it's just one day. But this highlights when these two come together, you can make ozone. And ozone is out of compliance. These are the number of exceedances of ozone in the high belt for 3 years from the midterm review. These are a lot of exceedances. And so we're currently working at the CSIR on modeling the impact that the hotspot has on this. There are other sources of NO2 ground-based that also can impact this. And then just one more of the response that the coal-fired power plants, I mean, it comes out in the report with the insinuation, I felt, that coal-fired power plants are the only source, particularly even this quote that the Johannesburg Pretoria area in particular show the majority of NO2 pollution is caused by coal-fired power plants. And the evidence doesn't support this. In the city of Johannesburg, the exceedances are seen at Buccleuch and Newtown, which are traffic sites, and also at Alex, which is domestic burning and traffic. And they're not the only source of NO2. And one reason it's difficult sometimes to use international emission estimates is that they only count what they know and what they count. And what I mean by that is ESCOM publishes their emissions. You can imagine somebody in the UK, where maybe some, you know, trying to figure out how many cars go on the highway, you know, getting the traffic counts, getting how much fuel is used for domestic burning correctly. That's more difficult. So many times the larger point sources are well estimated in these emission inventories, but the more local, the few sources are not. And we spend a lot of time developing and working on emission inventories because you have to count everything to know what the different proportions are. And then emissions go into our model, and if the emissions aren't right, our model won't necessarily be right. And that's why one of my main messages was it's imperative to correctly identify the sources and impacts, so that we can do the right thing to improve air quality. And I must admit, I was very happy to see that also there was call for action on vehicles in the Greenpeace report. They do emit NOx, and they definitely contribute here. So just a few last thoughts about the use of TROPE-OMI. As a scientist, the launch of TROPE-OMI was met with great excitement. This is wonderful. These really are some of the most high-resolution satellite images we have. And I did speak with the TROPE-OMI algorithm team in Europe about the methodology used. We do have some feedback that it's not yet robust, but we do know how to do this, and we can improve it as we go forward to use these data. These will be very important data to use. We can use these for model input. We already do that, not the TROPE-OMI, but others, in that when the satellite goes over, if you want to know about a wildfire or about a biomass burning, you can see where the fires are. We also can use this to improve the emission estimates. Emissions are the start of everything. That's what we put in our model. That's how we understand. That's what we put in our model to understand what the impact is on the ambient. And then long-term trends as well. So I won't go through these slides. I have a very similar slide for the long-term trends. Elizabeth showed this, showing a decrease. I'm sorry that it's small, but I found this one quite interesting. It was an analysis of the change in NO2 versus population growth. And these are all African cities that they looked at. And only Johannesburg had population increase, but NO2 column decrease. And that is a good sign. We do still have a hotspot, but we have decoupled the population growth from the increase in emissions. Because I am sure those people are still buying cars. I am sure there's still more happening, but we have decoupled it. It just means that this is going in the right direction, even though there is still a lot of work to do. So just in summary, and there is more information in there, and I'm happy to answer questions afterwards, the evidence does show that there is an NO2 hotspot. We do know this, and we have been observing it for, almost 2 decades. But it does not show that it's the largest in the world. That analysis cannot yet be done due to the seasonality, the altitude, actually working with the quantitative satellite information. What we've looked at are pretty pictures. You can't use pretty pictures to do this comparison. It would need to be done in a more robust way. We can do this assessment after there's a year of TROPE-OMI or using other satellite information. Where and when it impacts on the ground can't be determined from this information. This shows where the column goes. It is important that we do this, but you can't just use the column by itself to say the city of Johannesburg is impacted by it and breathing it in, particularly when the ground level measurements do not show this hot spot coming down and me breathing it. We would have seen much higher levels of NO2. But of course, I am not saying that NO2 is not important. We do need to see what impacts it has on the chemistry of the region for the other criteria pollutants, both ozone and particulate matter. And satellites are great. As a scientist, it can provide really critical information to air quality management. And this is a capacity that I think is not very large currently in South Africa. But it is a critical skill that we need, and we really would look forward to training students and other researchers on how to do this information, on how to do such analysis. And then I'll just leave it with the main message that I started with, that not being pedantic just because I'm an academic and we can be pedantic and academic about things, but we really do want to improve air quality. And so we really do need to get the correct evidence behind it. And I added one more, that satellites are really a great source of data. But as we can see here, they must be paired with ground-based measurements and also models that we use to see, to get out all the information that we can for them. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I believe there's another person that the department would like to present to us briefly. Who's that COO?
Thank you, Chair. We have Professor Anagan, who is also a retired professor. We felt it was important to get an independent scientific view and also maybe interpretation of the report from him. So we asked him to come.
Okay, Prof.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the House.
Are you comfortable there, or do you want to come here?
Let me come there.
Of the presentation, Chair, has been printed
yeah.
and circulated.
I do have one. I don't know where the members are. They do. Okay, Prof. Happening today, we say, are you overwhelmed? too many presentations.
Good morning.
Okay.
My name is Harold Anagon. I'm currently an adjunct professor at Northwest University, previously employed at the University of Johannesburg for 11 years and prior to that the University of Witwatersrand, 30 years. I've been an active researcher in air quality and energy for approximately 40 years. And have published extensively in the field of air quality studies, particularly on air quality from the Mpumalanga High Veld. I need to declare an interest in that historically, all the way from 1978 until the present, I have been funded in various research projects by ESCOM. My presentation today, Honourable Chair, is confined primarily as a response to the Greenpeace media briefing entitled New Satellite Data Reveals World's Largest NO2 Air Pollution Emission Hotspots. The scientific background has been presented by the previous speaker, Dr. Rebecca Garland of the CSIR, and the DEA has presented the departmental point of view. I wish to focus almost exclusively on the content of the report. I would, at the risk of repetition, briefly like to outline the main proposition and argument of this Greenpeace media briefing so that we're quite clear on what we are discussing. This Greenpeace media briefing is what I would call a piece of science and technology communication. It is not a research report. It is not a thesis. It is intended as a communication of scientific information to the public. The central proposition of the article is that there is a serious public health crisis to the inhabitants of the Pretoria-Johannesburg region brought about by exposure to nitrogen oxide, pollution caused primarily by high emission rates of NO pollutant gases from Eskom power plants on the Mpumalanga High Veld. The trigger for this communication at this time is availability of high-resolution images obtained from a recently launched European Space Agency satellite showing a high concentration, column depth of NO2 gases over the Mpumalanga high belt. So you could say, why now? Why not last year? Why not sometime later? The immediacy is a wonderful new satellite which has got a much higher resolution, and we know the difference between grainy pictures from the first digital cameras of 15 or 20 years ago and the very high resolution images that we've now got on our cell phones, so we understand what we mean about improved resolution. You get better pictures? Yes. The Greenpeace media briefing gives evidence and arguments that the high-resolution satellite reveals, in other words, that the, implying that it's new, that the Mpumalanga high belt is the largest hotspot of NOx emissions in the world, and they made much of that in their own presentation. They assert that this new spy in the sky, the polluters can no longer hide, implying that the polluters were, in fact, trying to hide something or had been hiding something. They argue that due to prevailing winds, the NOx plumes frequently blow towards the Pretoria-Johannesburg conurbation, and that as a consequence, approximately 8 million residents are exposed, in their words, regularly exposed to extreme and dangerous levels of NO2 pollution. Information is given on the health effects, acute and chronic, of such exposure, and in conclusion, the briefing sets out a set of demands for remedial and planning actions, both in the field of air pollution and with respect to the energy infrastructure of the country. I intend to confine my remarks to the air quality issues. I'm not an economics expert. I have some expertise in energy, but in the interests of brevity, I will confine my analysis to the air quality aspects. I'm going to do this analysis at three levels. Analysis of the scientific and factual content, to see where we agree and disagree with the factual scientific basis. The analysis of the structure of the argument, so we can see although there might be true premises, it's possible to construct a false argument based on true premises. The conclusions can be false even if the premises are factually correct. Then, as this media briefing was a piece of scientific communique, we need to look at it as a piece of writing in its genre and succeed and comment on whether it succeeds or fails, and then my conclusions. Okay, so let's jump in. The scientific and factual content. Mpumalanga High Fault is the largest hotspot of NOx and emissions in the world. As the previous speakers indicated, this is not disputed. We know that the High Fault is one of the largest clusters of coal-fired power stations anywhere. Indeed, some of the Eskom power stations have higher NOx emissions than others due to historical technical equipment that was fitted. However, is the largest in the world. It really doesn't matter. As some recent events in this house have occurred, who's largest or biggest or smallest has no particular bearing on the argument. The issue is, there is a concentration of power stations, and yes, there is a large emission in tons per annum of pollutant gases, NOx and SO2, from this region. Now, whether you divide that by a circle of 25 kilometers radius or the political area of Mpumalanga to make a bigger or smaller number is what I term a gee whiz number. All you can respond is, gee whiz, it's big. It is not a scientific metric which has meaning in anything in colloquial sense. It is not a regulated standard. It's not a good basis for comparison. So that argument is spurious. It's acknowledged there's a large source of emissions, and we need in the comparisons to take into account not only the quantity, but where in the atmosphere it is emitted, as Dr. Garland has pointed out, and then in terms of our regulation, we moved with our new environmental law from emissions control to receiving environment control. What is the impact at ground level that has to be managed? Not only how much goes into the air, but what is the amount that you or I breathe at ground level? So please, that this issue of biggest or smallest is a misleading argument designed to intended to create a buzz, and if I dare say, a little bit of hysteria, and is not a meaningful statistic. The health effects of NOx, the numerous statements throughout the piece, these are not disputed. They're well-known effects at various levels of exposure, and it's good that they mention it, but several times. The frequency of wind blowing towards Gauteng, the residents exposed regularly, it's not untrue, but evidence presented in a qualitative and selective manner, Dr. Garland has shown how full dispersion modeling and trajectory analyses are available to show the frequency of paths of high altitude Gauteng and the long-term averages, the modeled impact of Eskom high-level emissions when they eventually dilute and arrive there. So it's not disputed, but they're better tools than the Greenpeace article. Waves the hands a bit. It's not false, but it's also not very scientific. The residents are exposed to extreme and dangerous levels of NO2 pollution. This is false. The monitoring data at ground level stations and dispersion monitoring results show that the NOx levels are mostly within the South African air quality limits, both in Gauteng and the other power stations. So if we're worried about the receiving environment, this statement is false, misleading, and calculated to create alarm. The analysis of the structure of the argument, the way that conventional argument and air quality assessment proceeds as follows. Forgive me for lecturing you. Emission inventory, you look at the location, species, quantity and rate of emissions, and also the height in the atmosphere at which it's released. You do dispersion modeling to calculate using mathematical models to indicate where this pollution travels to and how it's removed. Impact assessment, how concentrated is it at ground level at impact sites where we receive it? Do we believe mathematical models? If a mathematical model was an aeroplane, would you fly in it? I'd hope your answer would be no. Those models are imprecise. They are indicators, not absolutes, so we verify the output by doing monitoring at selected sites. And the monitoring and model validation by comparison to the measured levels. Then there are source apportionment studies, which Dr. Garland has alluded to. You look at the multiple sources and see how much each source category contributes to what we measure. And from that, you develop intervention strategies, integrated air quality planning, in which the DEA has already indicated that they are doing this for the priority areas. Indeed, that was the intention in the legislation of providing for priority areas that at a national level we could take control of large areas and put the resources in place for this integrated planning, not only put it into place, but scheduled reviewing of progress, and that's currently in the second round of review for both Mpumalanga Highveld and the Vaal Triangle. The Greenpeace briefing has a fundamental gap in their reasoning. They, the anonymous authors, the authorship is not indicated, jumped from the stages emission inventories and wind frequency analysis to exposure levels. The dispersion modeling step or estimate of dilution is omitted. The briefing makes no mention of monitoring results that contradict their central claim of regular extreme and dangerous levels exposure of NOx. So they've conveniently forgotten the hard evidence of data, not only by DEA's monitoring sites, but by industry monitoring sites and monitoring sites run by municipalities on this. So the briefing fails entirely on this failure of argument. Emissions are not exposures. Now I've highlighted that view. Emissions are not exposures. And this jump from there are a large number of tons emitted from the power stations, therefore people are exposed to dangerous, extreme and dangerous levels of pollution in Pretoria, Johannesburg, is a fatal flaw and jump in logic. So while many of their premises may be true and are not contested, this jump in argument fatally flaws their argument. And on this ground alone, the Greenpeace media briefing should be rejected as a scientifically flawed piece of scientific communication and ought to be totally discredited and rejected. If we look at this article as a scientific communique, the tone of the briefing is of strong advocacy calculated to create alarm. The satellite images show the integrated column depth of NOx in the atmosphere. The briefing fails to mention that the Haifa plume is located in the mid-troposphere, a few hundred meters above ground, and does not represent the ground level concentrations. The briefing claims groundbreaking satellite data reveals the new satellite data give better resolution, but the images are known for at least 20 years. Here is the evidence. Mr. Chairperson, been there, seen there, have got the mug. I'll pass it around to you. This mug was obtained from the University of Heidelberg in 2005, showing the hot spot over South Africa. This is not new information. You've got a better resolution, a better picture of it, but the claim that this reveals and is new is an exaggeration. The tone of the briefing is strong advocacy calculated to create alarm. The frequent repetition of the adverse health effects. You can state it, good, put it in one paragraph, a long paragraph you like, but it's repeated at least 7 or 8 times. The use of pejorative adjectives when describing power stations and their emissions. The statements questioning the appropriateness of South African emission limits as weak, by reference to countries not normally used as benchmarks for South African air quality regulations. References to China and India, those are not our reference standard countries. We generally follow, Honourable Chair, the US EPA limits and standards or the European limits. China and India are not our benchmark countries, and specifically the World Health Organization does not issue standards. They are guidelines, they are aspirational, they have no legal jurisdiction and should not be used in rational arguments in guiding policy at this level. We look at their list of demands. I'm sorry, this is less legible. I've only taken the second of the list of demands relating to air pollution action plan from Mpumalanga. Demands that the following follows the guidelines for maximum air pollution levels of the World Health Organization. I've just indicated that's inappropriate. And international emission standards for coal-fired power stations. Sets up concrete measures and steps to improve air pollution. This demand implies that there are no concrete measures and steps in place. Honourable Chair, this is false. There are concrete things. The DEA Air Quality Division has very definite plans. They've implemented them over a number of years and have come up with innovative approaches based on best practice and taking into account the constitutional mandate to protect the quality of health of the people, taking into account economic and social considerations. The demand for closing power stations would result in devastating consequences if we were to have shortages of electricity generation. This claim is false, tendentious, and indicates perhaps a deliberate ignorance of the DEA Air Quality Division activities. The third part of this demand introduces independent, regular, and reliable air pollution monitoring, which is available to the public and informs decision-making, including transparent data. This demand, Honourable Chair, implies that there's no regular, reliable air pollution monitoring, that the data is not available to the public. These claims are false, as been shown by the previous speakers, show that there is an online app, the South African Weather Service provides data on request. These claims are damaging and insulting to the numerous professional activities of the Department of Environment, Industry and the academic researchers, and unworthy of Greenpeace to make or to imply such allegations. So in conclusion, the Greenpeace media briefing is a piece of propaganda containing fatal flaws in their basic argument. I'm disappointed in Greenpeace. I wanted to, and I do respect them, activists are necessary in the ecosystem of governance and social interaction, but this is not a license to propagate false information or flawed scientific information. This briefing should be dismissed and not taken into account in policy making or air quality planning. As a piece of science communication that has succeeded beyond their dreams, the fact that we are having a parliamentary committee hearing on this piece indicates that they've succeeded in drawing public attention to it, but it is hugely disappointing that this flawed piece of writing should have reached this degree of prominence, both in the public media and in this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Very provocative, not provoking. I guess this is the right platform to engage with this. Okay. Are we ready to ask questions?